pizza time. He's on fire! My toes! My toes!
So at the time of this recording, it is March 10th, and we have an awesome show planned for tonight. And I think both of us are very, very excited to jump into it.
Woohoo! Get it? March 10th, 3:10, Mario Day. It's Mario Day, by the way, which is very fitting because we decided that we want to start recording some video game themed shows, maybe a little personal history throughout our lives of video game experiences. Something that we've talked about for a while, because for a while there, I would not shut the hell up about video games. So it just made sense.
It's a natural progression, man. So starting out on a series of video game inspired shows tonight, here on Leftover Pizza, we bring you the original Nintendo Entertainment System. So we'll be sharing some experiences with the system as well as four games each near and dear to our heart. And just a disclaimer, not a top eight of all time or anything like that. These are just eight random games we enjoy. Not necessarily our eight favorite games either. They're just, like I said, eight random games we enjoy. So the Nintendo was released in Japan in like July 15th, 1983, and it received its big U.S. nationwide release in September 27th, 1986. It was kind of this drastic upgrade from any previous video game system on the market at that time. So what was your first Nintendo experience?
Well, if we're talking purely on the Japanese release date, I was somewhere around negative 10 years old
right
at that point. Yeah. No, it's funny. I mean, the NES had been around for quite some time before I was alive and sentient. And, I mean, realistically, the 16-bit era was well underway and almost over by the time I even started playing video games. So I really started playing video games in the N64 era, the 32 and 64-bit era. But while I did play the N64 when it came out, I think I was like three, and I have very vivid memories of being a three-year-old playing Mario 64 for the first time. Hmm. Yes, I was young, but I can still have that mind-blowing experience of playing my first 3D game, okay? I still had it, people. Don't doubt me. My uncle, who I've mentioned many times before on the show, was just a big kid and always was buying, you know, video game systems. He started way back when with the Atari, the 2600, and just would buy and replace. And every time he would replace one, he would give that old console to somebody else and move on to the next one. So I got his hand-me-downs. My cousin's got the earlier one, you know, the 2600. But I did end up with his old NES, and that really was like one of my first experiences between that, and then I got my own Super Nintendo at a very young age. But yeah, my journey started with the 8-bit stuff. So All the old games that he played and he had bought for himself became my games. So this is really like the first console that I ever had and played. It was not the first console where I got to pick my own games and buy my own games for it. So basically, to your point that you just said a little bit ago, where the whole show is not going to be based on the best games or whatever, it's going to be based on our own experiences. That's really the case for the NES for me, because I didn't get to pick any of these games. I just had what I had, and that's what I played. So some stuff was considered really bad, like, you know, if you watch the Angry Video Game Nerd, You read any best of NES lists online, a lot of the stuff that I had is not gonna make the best of, like, not even a little bit, but it's what I had and I learned to love it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The NES has a ton of really shitty titles, and if that's what you're stuck with, you learn to just enjoy them for what they are. And sometimes your favorites that you may have picked back in the day might have sucked too.
It's funny because it's kind of one of those experiences that I don't want to say kids these days aren't going to have, because it's everybody. Like, even us as adults playing video games these days, as much as we like to think that we're hardened veterans, we also got soft at a certain point.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If we've got a Nintendo Switch, if we've got a Steam Deck, if we've got an Xbox, we have all these resources now, YouTube channels and, a backlog of websites and, you know, TikTok accounts, whatever, where we can finely tune and find exactly what we're going to be interested in and know before we spend any money if we're going to like this game and like this experience. So it's like, we're so spoiled and catered to now, even as adults, because I don't want to hear it, that we have, you know, the same experience now. No, we don't. Like, we're all so spoiled that we very rarely, I'll say, most of us end up playing bad games. Because, like, at this point, if you're playing a game that's bad or not going to be enjoyable, it's on you for not doing the research, which is very easy to do the research now.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep.
And honestly, with Steam and things like that, we have the amenities that we never had before, where it's like, if a game sucks and you've only played a little bit of it, they'll just give you your money back and take the game back.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So with the NES, it was one of those things where you took a risk, you plunked down your $40-$50 on a game, and well, if it sucked, you learned to like it. Even if it was terrible and you hated it, you would play that thing until you couldn't play it anymore, simply because that's just what you did.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we have a similar experience with it. For me, I had an Atari as well and a Nintendo. I wasn't there for either purchase, obviously. These things came before me. They came out, the Nintendo was 86. I came out in 89. So 3 years, yeah. It was there before I was. I really don't know where it came from. I never asked my folks or anything like that. But when I was born, that shit was ripe for the picking. And I loved both the NES and the Atari, but the NES was just a completely different animal, a much better animal, in my opinion. And yep. I've been addicted to it pretty much ever since. And a lot of reasons why. One, I didn't know a lot of people that knew about Atari. I couldn't borrow Atari games because nobody in my area had one. But my next door neighbors became basically my drug dealers. They're like, I'd go over, hey man, I need that game. I need that fix. And we rarely bought a new game if we didn't already know that it was something we were going to enjoy. Being able to just experience them, you know, before you actually paid for them. That was how we did it. And speaking of drug dealers, did you ever have that that kid that knew more about the games than you because he had like a subscription to Nintendo Power, or like he had the phone line or whatever, the hotlines that he would call and get all these different passwords, like a straight up drug dealer?
I did. It was my cousin, and really it was my cousin's dad, because my cousin's dad was very big into gaming. All throughout our childhood, he was gaming before we were both born. So my cousin had an NES. My cousin had, eventually he had a Sega Saturn. He had a Game Gear. The NES was his dad's. That was hand-me-downed. The Saturn was actually his uncle's, which was hand-me-down to him. So in his house, there was a subscription to Nintendo Power. And when my cousin and I got a little bit older and the PS2 rolled around, he actually got a subscription of his own to, maybe it was a Game Informer or something like that.
Nice.
Whatever one would send the demo discs pretty frequently, for like PS2 era. So he was always sort of, we were just about the same age, but he was, I guess, my plug, quote unquote, because if I wanted to try something new or experience something new or learn about something new, you know, I'd be down the street at his house reading through his magazines or playing with his demo discs that he got, or, you know, his uncle would have given him this to borrow, you know, this game. So the two of us would play it based off of that. So he was really my plug for a while, because he was not a kid who was big on sports. I was barely a kid who was big on sports. Like, I played baseball and that's it. But my parents, for a while, they let me play games, but they would push more of like the outdoor activities.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I would hate it. And my cousin was the opposite. My cousin was just like, yeah, I play games, man.
That's so all I do.
He was the kid I would go to and it would be like, yeah, I heard about this and I checked out, you know, this game and this game is coming down the pipeline. So that was my plug, just like you're talking about, for sure.
That's awesome, man. Well, I think now that we got that all off of the table, what do you say we blow some of these cartridges out and pop them in?
You're not supposed to do that. You're not
who cares?
Supposed to do that.
You did it.
But I do
it
anyways. I still do it. Who gives a shit? All right, Grimey, I am starting off this episode, my first game, and probably one of my most played games on the entire Nintendo Entertainment System is Kung Fu, which is also known as Kung Fu Master. That was the arcade version of this game. So Kung Fu was the home release, and I believe this came out in 1985 for the system. It was one of the original set of the Black Box
games. Yeah, classic, very iconic.
Absolutely, and not the most amazing game.
This game's tough. Like, when I first started playing this game, I felt like it was impossible to beat.
Wait, so you think that now it's not so tough?
I feel like it's a little less tough. Once you start learning the characters, when they start like appearing and stuff and what they do, I feel like it gets a little bit easier. But it reminds me, did you ever play The Karate Kid?
No, I never played The Karate Kid game, not one that I had.
Okay, so it's very similar to that, only obviously The Karate Kid has stages and it's different. You like jump on different platforms and stuff. But the setup is relatively similar, where you're just a guy and you're just kicking and punching, ducking. But it's very similar to The Karate Kid. And that game is even harder than this game, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, I don't doubt you. Because I think that's going to be a running theme throughout this 8-bit Nintendo episode, is there's always games that are harder. But it doesn't mean that these games are necessarily easy.
No.
So, like, with this Kung Fu game, I cannot tell you the amount of time I've spent in my life playing this game. And I think only once have I ever gotten past the second level.
Okay.
Like, I've made it to the second level many times. But I don't make it far into the second level many times. And that's another recurring theme, I think, that we're going to be
talking about
throughout this episode, is that a lot of these games are so tough because they are memory-based. You need to play through it. You need to learn what's coming at you, because this was all programmed. None of this was randomly generated stuff like games tend to be now. Like in Kung Fu, you know that the first thing that's coming is, like, you got a guy coming on the right of you, then you got another guy, he's coming up on your left after that first guy, and then you get three guys in a line coming up on the right of you again before you get the same thing on the left, and then you get a mini-boss who's throwing knives at you. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
That is a pattern, and that is the only reason why I'm able to get through the first level relatively easy. Is that is burned into my brain now. I know the patterns. I know the waves that are coming at me. And so I know what to anticipate and how to beat them. But there's timing that you need to worry about with this game.
Totally.
It's like the punches and the kicks, while they work and they're responsive, if you don't time those punches and those kicks just perfectly, especially when you've got waves of enemies coming in from the right and then following directly after from the left.
Yeah.
If you get your three guys down, your three enemies down on the right, and don't turn quickly enough, or if your finger jitters and you go to the new wave of enemies on the left, and then somehow manage to find yourself back facing the right again while you start attacking. It does this thing where the enemies touch you and they sort of freeze you in place.
Yeah.
So you have no choice but to take at least a couple of hits. And the way that it freezes you, you can't really turn back around quickly enough to attack those enemies. So it's one of those things where it doesn't matter how many times you've played it, and how many, you know, how much you've memorized the patterns, like the enemy waves and everything, like, you can still do little things wrong that end up negatively affecting you. And this is just the first fucking level. You know what I mean?
So what? It's only six levels, right? Six, seven?
Your guess is as good as mine, because like I said, halfway through the second is where I tap out usually.
So it's all like the same setup. You have, like you said, enemies coming from the left and right. The enemies get a little bit harder. Some of them just come at you directly and start punching you. It gets really, really goofy once they start throwing knives and shit at you. That really sucks. Like, I have no problem with these, like, little light blue guys that come. I mean, you can kung fu kick the shit out of these guys left and right. Yep. No problem. Them knives get involved, and it's stressful. So, I watched a YouTube video of some guy play it. He defeated this game twice in 12 minutes. That's
12 minutes?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was really, really surprised by, like, the timing. And then, to top it off, the ending. You've never seen the ending of this before?
Nope, I've never seen the ending. And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe once I got to, maybe there's a boss on the second level, like a proper, I'm saying a boss. It's not a boss in the modern sense. It's
right.
Just a harder enemy.
Harder guy.
I think
maybe
I've seen that once, but no, I've never decided to actually look ahead, because it's one of those things where I'm like, life is long in the perfect scenario. Maybe I'll get there someday.
Right.
It might be 60 before I do, but I'll get there someday.
Are you going to let me ruin it for you?
Yeah, go ahead, because I'll forget.
For the purpose of
my
this
memory
show,
is terrible.
It's the worst ending ever. So the whole thing, you're like battling all these people to get to this girl, Sylvia, at the end, all right? You beat this end boss guy, and you found Sylvia, and it's across the screen it says, "Congratulations, Thomas and Sylvia, but their happiness does not continue long." The end. That's it.
It's revealed that she actually loves his brother. She wants a divorce.
Or she's just a mushroom person and can be found in another kingdom. That's how it goes, right?
Yeah, another kingdom castle. Yeah, whatever.
Using Burger Time, the home video game where you're a chef being chased by food that constantly disagrees with you, like hot dogs that have a taste for revenge. Eggs that don't turn over easy, and pickles that are very, very sour. Burger Time! Now for Intellivision, coming this fall for Atari 2600. Burger Time! From Mattel Electronics, don't be surprised.
So you like hamburgers, Derek?
Actually, it's funny that you bring that up, because I just ate a slider for lunch before we started recording this.
Did you?
I swear to God, I just horked down a burger. So, yes, I do enjoy a burger, Grimy.
That's weird. Did you have to, like, battle a whole bunch of condiments before you made this burger? Or were you just able to get it?
Well, I opened the fridge and all of my condiment bottles fell on me and buried me for 5 minutes, if that's what you're asking.
That's pretty much what I was getting at, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a struggle. I almost died. I'm the only one home alone, so, you know. Thank God I got out of that one.
So if you have no clue what we're talking about, we're of course talking about Burger Time, originally released in an arcade cab called Hamburger in Japan, eventually making its way to the NES. It's one of my favorite games.
It really is. You've brought it up to me on numerous occasions, and it's funny because I played a lot of games in preparation for this episode. This was not one of them.
No, not at all. You've never played this game before?
I have tried playing it a total of one time, and it was pre-pandemic, December of 2019. I was out in Boston at a little barcade. They had an arcade cabinet of this game, and it took me way too long to realize that the cabinet was broken.
I put
a lot of money into that cabinet. Of course, I had a few drinks beforehand. I pumped probably $2 of quarters into this thing, and I'm like, why? This game sucks.
It's not working.
I'm trying to, like, it's just not working, man. I don't know what's happening. And then I realized, oh, the cabinet is broken. So other than that, I have not actually played Burger Time. And I probably should, because you rave about it. You tell me the most wonderful things about this game.
It's great, man. I mean, this is one of them staples from when I was a child. And I remember even my parents jumping in on the action. This was one of my dad's favorite games. And like, that's one of my fondest memories of the Nintendo, was my dad playing this game as a very young kid. But in this game, you are a chef, Peter Pepper. Ooh. And the goal is to walk across hamburger toppings in this ladder-like maze. And the burger items drop to the floor to form an entire hamburger. You have to avoid all these anthropomorphic foods like hot dogs, bacon, pickles, and eggs. The pressure is really on as soon as these little fuckers start hitting the scene, which is almost immediately. It's very stressful. It's the worst game of Pac-Man you'll probably ever play.
Very stressful. I hate it. It's my favorite game I've ever played.
Dude, it is so good, though. It's super enjoyable. Once you complete a stage, the levels obviously get a little bit harder. You have a weapon. It's a salt shaker. So every time you kill one of these food items, which you kind of trap them onto this piece of food that you're dropping on these stages, and they go down with it, and up come your points, and you get enough points, and another salt shaker appears in the middle of the screen, and you go down and get it. It's pretty much the gist of the game. Us kids played it a lot. The game for us when we were kids really intensified, though, once we got a Game Genie. So we started cheating a little bit here and there.
I love cheating. Cheating in video games, like peanut butter and jelly, like peanut butter and chocolate, like
yeah,
peanut butter and tuna fish, you know?
Slapjack and a cigarette? Oh, wait. Other movie, sorry. I honestly don't know if you can beat this game. I don't know if there's an ending, because I never skipped on YouTube to like the end to see if there was an ending for this one. So cheating is about as good as it gets with this, and... Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever cheated long enough to beat it. I think I just got bored in like halfway through, because I don't know how many levels there are. It's like one of them things where it's just like keeps going and going and going. And like by the time you've completed half of the game, you're like, all right, well, we can go back outside again.
Yeah, absolutely. You play long enough that even if you're good at it, you get bored and you're like, all right, time to go do something else, which,
yeah,
you know, that's... kind of the best. You know what this reminds me of looking at it, and I can't speak again because I've never really played it, but just based off of the board alone that I'm looking at, looks a little bit like Mappy. Have you ever played Mappy? Or
No? That one doesn't sound familiar.
Nobody has ever played Mappy. It's crazy. Back in like the early 2000s, they were really popular, the plug-and-play games. Do you remember those? Where it was like a little joystick, but it had a cord coming out of it, and that you would plug it into your TV.
Okay.
So it kind of looked like an Atari 2600 joystick, but it was self-contained, and it was a little system. Well, okay. I like fell head over heels in love with those.
Derek and Mappy.
There was two Namco ones in particular that I really loved, but one of them had this game called Mappy, and it's this little mouse, and the board looked just like this, and you would fall down, and you would use like a little trampoline to get to different levels and like run around and whatever, but that's sort of what it looks like. So maybe a side project for you. If you love Burger Time, maybe try Mappy, because I'm assuming the gameplay is probably very similar, but different enough that you're going to get a new experience, like... Burger Time 2.0, Mouse Edition.
Burger Time 2.0. So it would be like Pac-Man 3.0.
Yeah, yeah. Or like Fix-It Felix 0.5, you know?
So many points, I wouldn't know what to do with them all. I'll leave you on a fun fact. The record high score on Burger Time is 11,512,500 points by Brian L. Wagner of Turboville, Pennsylvania on September 19th, 2008. So, yeah, shout out to PA. We're just holding Burger Time down. No big deal.
I think the thing that I'm more impressed by is the fact that there's a town called Turboville.
It's spelled weird. It's T-U-R-B-O-T-V-I-L-L-E. I don't know if the T is silent, but it is in this episode.
Turboville, USA. I love it.
The challenge is ice hockey. The power is Nintendo. It's as slick as ice, as fast as fury. Throwing your shoulder, digging your blade, blast it in, or be blown away. Ice hockey only from Nintendo.
Grimey, are you ready to talk about the 142nd best game according to Nintendo Power's top 200 games?
Oh, clearly it deserves a better score than that. Come on.
It does. I'm kind of shocked that it's ranked so low. But I guess if you think about the full games list, like, it's impressive that a hockey game made it into the top 200 at all out of like 1,000+ games on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, like, let's say that we just isolate all the sports games. Where do you think it is on that level there? It's got to be up there. It's got at least a top 5.
Like for Nintendo sports games in general?
Yeah.
Like Nintendo Entertainment System? Oh, yeah. Probably the best. I mean, I've played all of... by the way, we're talking about ice hockey. 1988's ice hockey, to be specific. I've played other sports games on the Nintendo Entertainment System, and none of them I find very entertaining. Not the way that ice hockey is, Grimey.
I can't vouch for ice hockey much because I only played it just like a tiny bit. What I will say is it's better than the baseball game I had, which was really kind of hard to get the hang of. But this has a lot going for it, in my opinion. It's pretty nice. Sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, baseball and football games, people played them for a long time, and I'm sure that people would make their case, but I really don't think that they kind of came into their own and were, like, great representations of the sport and, like, accurate and fun until, like, the PS2 era. That's just me, though. I mean...
Right.
You know, like NFL Blitz, that's a one-off. I'll give it that. But, like, they really were starting to get good and, like, accurate and fun around the PS2 generation. Ice hockey, on the other hand, if I'm comparing it to something like Tecmo Bowl, this is going to be very controversial for some people. I don't know. I think it's as good as it's going to get in such a broken down, simplistic version of the sport. I've played Tecmo Bowl. I don't get it. Maybe it's because I wasn't alive and that wasn't my only option, for playing football on a video game system. But like, you people who are sticking with the Tecmo Bowl love out there, why?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you?
You people. Did you hear what he called you? You people.
You people. You Tecmo Bowl freaks.
Nah, I'm here for that. This game plays pretty good. Like, I was watching videos of it before I actually downloaded it, and you could see these characters, like these little sprites, like flying all over the place on this screen. It plays like that. I thought it was a sped up video, I'm not gonna lie. But when I started playing, it's like, wow, these are actually probably one of the fastest moving characters that you can use in an NES game, more than likely.
Very quick, very fluid gameplay. And I think the real benefit of ice hockey, again, here goes Derek talking about sports on Leftover Pizza, is that this doesn't get bogged down in the typical shit that makes sports unappealing to some people, where there's not constant stoppage of play. There's not, you know, especially in this version, we don't really have to worry about penalties. We don't have to worry about you know, icing and shit like that stops the game and makes us, you know, take a new puck drop somewhere else. It's basically like that puck drops and you play until you either get into a fight or somebody scores. And
oh my God. I love the little fights, by the way. They're so funny. Just like a bunch of little chubby sprites having seizures. Just
yes. Oh my God. I wrote a note on that because I played this for the first time in years for this show, but this was one game that I did play a lot as a kid because, again, it was one of a handful of games that my uncle had. And I always liked it because of how quick it played. But trying this again after not playing it for years and years was a fucking chore trying to figure out how to play it again.
Learn everything. Yeah.
It was fun, but it was frustrating. My first game back, I lost 11-0, by the way. Total blowout. I got no goals. But to that point, one of the notes that I wrote down there was like, I didn't realize or remember that you could get into fights in this game. And it was the funniest thing I think I've seen in a while. It is so frantic. They're doing like that cartoon thing, like an 8-bit version of dust clouds that are getting kicked up while you're kicking the shit out of each other on the ice. And like seeing other little 8-bit sprites come over and try to break up an 8-bit fight was just so funny to me. It was like the funniest thing I've seen in an NES game, I think.
Yeah, I was watching the YouTube video of it. That's when I first saw the fight happen. I was fucking howling. I was oh my God.
So funny. So funny. And that's not the only funny thing in this game. After the second period, before we went into the third, for my game, little 8-bit Zambonis came out. And there were like three 8-bit Zambonis that were cleaning the ice. And I was like, wow, that's a nice little attention to detail that they tossed into this game. They didn't have to do it. People don't need to see a Zamboni, but it was nice that they decided to they were going to figure out how to make it work and include them. Because that is a big part of hockey, especially if you go to a real game, sitting around watching them drive. So a little kid strapped into a seat waving at everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Hi, hi, how you doing?
Like you know. On some weird little one-person parade.
yeah, exactly. Love it. And then the other thing that really made me laugh, and I don't know if you saw it in the video that you watched, but in between periods, obviously they do side changes. So you change nets every period.
Right.
After the period ends, before the next period begins, all of the players on the ice get brought to center ice and they start skating in a circle like some sort of a Wiccan cult ritual where everybody's just circling and circling and circling. And I was like, that's a little creepy. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty goofy. I could see this being like a really, really fun old school kind of a sleepover kind of video game where you have a bunch of people playing each other and then another group of people playing each other and down to the last two players. Like, fuck yeah, dude, that was how we would have done it.
Yeah. I think that's in general, not just talking about 8-bit stuff, but that's the beauty of any hockey game is they're really tailored to 2-player play, if not more. When I was in college, I can't be bothered to actually watch a hockey game unless I go to a hockey game because then I'm eating fried dough and like
drinking
chanting
beer.
You know, that's great. I love chanting and eating fried foods, but we would play a ridiculous amount of NHL 12 at that point simply because it's a game that's fine-tuned to the multiplayer experience. So as far back as the Nintendo, it's something that they were considering as well, where it's like, yeah, this is actually better with more people. It's not like Mario, where as much as I love Mario, 2-player consists of waiting until one person dies and then trying what they couldn't do, you know, with your little Luigi. Hockey is really great for that. And like you said, at a sleepover, I bet this game would rip.
Yeah, the only other sports game I ever played was that baseball one. And I know that we had a blast playing that at many a sleepover. I could see this one being a pretty good shoe-in for that. Probably better. So I didn't have Ninja Gaiden as a kid. What I did have was quite a bit different, but played relatively the same way as both this and Batman for the original NES, and that is the Kabuki Quantum Fighter. Does this little gem ring a bell?
Yeah, no, it didn't. I had never heard of this before, and While I didn't play Burger Time, I did decide I needed to try this based off of the name alone. I was like, what the hell are you picking? Let me just say, before you get into it, I don't dislike it. That's my, it's not that I don't like the game. I just haven't spent enough time with the game. Not like
that's
you.
That's fair. Right. Yeah. Because again, the patterns and stuff like that comes into play with this game especially. You have to learn what's coming next before you actually get good at the game. Uh-huh. But yeah, this game was borrowed from an uncle and never returned. I actually still have that copy here today. Sorry, Uncle John. It's still mine.
Hey man, that's what uncles are for. You steal their shit and never give it back. That's what they signed up for when they were becoming an uncle. Like, they had a say in it.
Yeah, and this happens often. Like, not just this one. We'll talk about that much later. Oh, yeah. But yeah, so the Kabuki Quantum Fighter is a very, very wild concept to begin with. And it didn't really faze me much as a kid because I didn't really understand it. I just took it for face value. Everything that was going on was good enough for me. So, little backstory, it's the year of our Lord, 2056. So way into the future, this virus has appeared in the main defense system computer of the planet Earth. So all the defenses on Earth is all from this one computer, and it gets a virus.
Was it a Mac?
No, I think
that's
it was,
the problem, because Macs don't get viruses. You know?
Exactly. They can't read them.
If the world was running off of a MacBook, maybe we'd be safe from all of this.
You know, it was probably one of them gray Windows 98s, like a Dell or something.
Oh, yeah, like a Gateway.
A Gateway.
Those are all over the place. The cow computer.
Yeah, I was just going to say the cow print. Oh, boy. So the solution to this crazy virus, 25-year-old Colonel. He's a colonel at 25. Imagine that. Scott O'Connor, a military agent, transfers his brain into raw binary code using experimental technology to combat this rogue virus. In this computer system, his body forms the self-image of his great-great-grandfather, who was a Kabuki actor. Does that any of this make sense yet?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Uh-huh, sure.
His name is Scott O'Connor, which I assume is Irish, but his ancestors, his great-great-grandfather, are Kabuki actors.
All right, so here's what here's my take on it, okay? You ever see that trauma movie, Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like if Sergeant Kabuki Man merged with, like, Akira. Okay, that's basically what this game is.
So this is the little fun fact here. The Famicom version was designed as a tie-in to this 1990 Keizo Hayashi film called Zipang. In this version, a 15-year-old boy named Bobby Yano transforms into this samurai ancestor and enters a supercomputer on a space station to clear the viruses. The U.S. version of the game, the NES version of the game, they didn't do that.
they
completely scrapped that whole tie-in, and they just pretty much left the game intact. So yeah, in this game you're just a Kabuki guy. You're traveling through this, like, physical world inside of a computer. You use your hair to battle enemies. There's, like, mutants and stuff. There's ninjas, and there's random computer pieces, like, battling you back, and it's your weaponry and stuff comes from computer chips. Very similar to the weapons, by the way, are very similar to the Batman game for NES. It's just pretty much ripped directly from that.
Yeah. So the enemies, like, the first enemy that you see, I was a little taken aback by. It was like a frogman, and it kind of reminded me of Battletoads a little bit. I actually had to stop and be like, is that a fucking Battletoad that's coming right at me? And it wasn't. But, you know, I'd be forgiven for making such a mistake. But what I will say, you mentioned it very briefly, and I want to hang on it for a second. You use your hair as your main weapon. You whip your hair back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, I see. You're going for the Willow Smith.
I think that Willow Smith owes this game a few royalties, okay? Because she definitely ripped a little something from Kabuki Quantum Fighter for her first big hit, okay?
Yeah, I could see it.
You know, I mean, we could, maybe we should learn ROM hacking. And we could actually turn our main character into Willow Smith, an 8-bit version of it. And then the final boss is Will Smith, and he comes out and he tries to slap you in the face.
Ends up missing and just hitting Chris Rock instead.
Wait. The end screen, the end title screen, after you beat the game, you defeat Will Smith. It's very simple. It just says, "You have beat Will Smith. He has been banned from the Oscars for 10 years. The end."
That's a perfect scenario. Unfortunately, I feel like they would also put Willow Smith's music inside the game. Yeah, it would be doing this game a disservice to be putting Willow Smith's music on it, because the music for this game is just bitchin'. It's so good, probably top tier chiptune music of all NES titles. I mean, it's up there. There's a lot of other ones that are pretty good, but this one, I could listen to these bops in my car, to be real with you.
And you do, actually.
I have. I've done it once or twice at least.
What I will say, we started off this segment by saying or alluding to the fact that maybe I didn't like this game, and it's not that I don't like this game, it's just difficult. But what I will say is that this game, the aesthetics, the visuals, the story, the music, it's all like, it's sick.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Pretty bitchin'. I gotta admit, like, it's got a real style to it that I think is kind of hard to do with, you know, 8-bit stuff. It's very stylized. It's very, like, it's just cool. Like, I don't know how else to describe it. It's like, it's very cyberpunk.
Probably the best way to explain it.
Yeah, very cyberpunk, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's got like a cool factor about it that, definitely outweighs its sometimes frustrating gameplay, again, because it's just, it's typical NES. It's difficult, but like,
yeah, it's edgy.
Don't let that dissuade you from playing. It's an edgy, cool game. It's just, you got to learn how the game works and learn the ins and outs. You're going to die a lot in the beginning, but it's doable. Love kaiju. I love kaiju. You love kaiju?
Does Stay Puft Marshmallow Man count as a kaiju?
He's kaiju.
Yeah, I love kaiju then. Yeah, I'm there. Count me in.
He loves kaiju. That's it. You heard it here first. Leftover pizza, love kaiju.
Big fans of the old kaiju.
And I'll take them any way I can get them, Grimy. I will take them in film form. I'll take them in real life. If they want to squash my city, I'm okay with it. I'll even take them in an 8-bit form. And the form that I'm talking about is Godzilla Monster of Monsters from 1989. This is a pretty late release NES game. And again, another one that my uncle passed off to me. And this one, the storyline's pretty cool. In the year 2XXX, the mysterious planet X appears when Pluto and Neptune switch positions in the solar system, and its inhabitants begin an attempt to conquer Earth. Using a legion of space monsters, though some of these creatures were in fact from Earth, as their primary attack force. So first of all, I mean, it's a Godzilla game. I don't know why they're trying to give it a story. Like, just say that they're rising up from the core of the Earth and trying to destroy it and call it a day. You know?
Yeah, it needs nothing. There's very, very big reptiles walking around on the planet.
Done. Easy. But what I will say is I do like the whole XXX trope. You know, like, they're not giving a year. They're staying, they don't want to commit to a year. It's 2000 and something. This could be 2999 for all we know. Or this could have been 2001. Yeah. You know, Godzilla could have been responsible for the collapse of the World Trade Centers. Like, I don't know. This game isn't telling me, so this could be canon, you know?
It's definitely not 3XXX. We'll never make it that far.
Yeah. And it's not 19XX, so, you know, this is a 2000s game. Anyways, I'm getting sidetracked. This was a game I played a lot, and I both remembered playing it and remembered nothing about it. You know, do you have those
definitely have those moments.
I've got these warm memories with this thing that I don't remember. Let me retry this, which I did. And I decided, okay, let's pop this back in. Let's prep for the show. And I remember, like, it all kind of came flooding back to me. There's this weird board game grid component to this game where, yeah, for whatever reason, you're moving your monster, like, two clicks at a time over this board that kind of looks like, I don't know, like Risk? Or is that kind of what the... I think it looks like a Risk board, if I'm not
It does
mistaken.
Look like that, yeah. It's very... chess piecey looking. It's strange how they did that.
It's all hexagonal. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, the whole point is that you're trying to get your two monsters, which are Godzilla and Mothra, down to the other, you know, kaijus. Like, there's a Mecha Godzilla and others that I'm not thinking of right now. It takes a while before you're able to get to the other monsters and fight them. And so what happens is you'll move your two clicks and then they'll just throw you into a random side-scrolling level. And it's kind of pointless. Like, Godzilla has a huge life bar.
Yeah.
And he doesn't ever really get taken down. And same thing with Mothra. Like, and you're just going through this level from the beginning to the end. And they're just like, I don't know if they're... military or what it is, but like just a bunch of things shooting at you trying to take you down and out of the sky.
Planes and tanks and all kinds of random shit.
The problem is that they're very weak and you take them down anyways. So
yeah,
if anything, it feels more like a waste of time going through those sections of the level. It's cool. Like, it looks good. It's not that it looks bad, especially for an 8-bit game. It's got some good detail on the monsters.
Yeah.
It's just that it feels like most of the gameplay is pointless. Like, you're just walking and mashing a button and not dying. And you do it over and over again until you can finally get to, you know, your enemy kaiju. And then that has a little bit more going on, but still... pretty easy for an 8-bit title. Games that are usually notoriously known as being hard and difficult to play. This one kind of isn't. It's just like mash your two buttons and kick ass, and that's it. Like, that's the whole game, as far as I can tell.
Pretty much. Yeah. Again, you know, it is very detailed 8-bit game. It looks really nice. I thought one thing that was really strange is when you start out on Earth, you can actually see the Earth behind you still. Just thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Never understood that.
Well, don't forget, a mysterious planet X appears.
It's true.
So that could be Planet X.
So that must be Planet X. Looks an awful lot like Earth, but who knows what Earth looks like in 2XXX.
Right. I mean, it's just Earth, but bizarro, you know?
Yeah. So the other thing I thought was really strange is, like, there's some pretty heavily detailed levels in this entire game. When you get to a boss fight, just a black screen, you and this other boss, and that's it.
Yeah, I did find that weird as well. I was sort of like, wow, for all of the detail that they're putting into most of these levels, like when you're just up against a boss, there's nothing there. And I don't know if that is a technical limitation, because I know...
Right.
I think that's sort of a thing with the NES that you can only display a certain amount of colors on screen at a time. So
sure, yeah.
Maybe these character models are so detailed and like they couldn't get stuff in the background that it was taking up too much memory or something. I don't really know, but kind of disappointing a little bit in that regard.
It's already kind of a laggy game as it is with all the detail and stuff. Like, certain games, they just have that lag to them while they're in this NES form. And even, like, when you download them on a ROM, it does the same thing. So I guess maybe that was kind of the thing. There is some truth to that. I don't know. It is a really amazing game. And I talk about the soundtracks a lot to these games. This one's got a pretty decent one. I love all the music to this game. Also, a long fucking game.
Yeah, I mean, super long. And another one where if I put my mind to it, I probably could beat this game. I don't think it's a difficulty thing. I think it's just a repetition thing. Like, this is one of those games where it's like, okay, I've played it for 15 minutes. I'm kind of over it. And that, I'm glad that I'm getting to that point, because that's something that I wanted to bring up on this NES show. That was a prevailing theme for me with this system, is that that's how I felt about most of these games, and I still feel about them. I've mentioned it before, I've got ADD pretty bad, so focusing on things most of the time is pretty difficult. Like, I already have a tendency to want to jump from thing to thing without completing this or completing that. But the NES in general offered a lot of experiences like this Godzilla game, where it was sort of like, what happened first? Was the game too hard and did I die and lose interest? Or was the game too repetitive and I lost interest? And for me, at least, I was sort of encouraged when playing. I could play, 2 hours of Nintendo and play like 6 different games in 2 hours, because I would just constantly be like getting bored of this one, pulling that one out, putting another game in, starting that one, and then pulling that one out and then doing another game and then playing a little bit of that one. So, like, I never made it super far in a lot of Nintendo games because, A, most of them didn't save or have the capability to save, short of using, like, a password system. The main takeaway was just, like, I would just get bored really quickly. And it's not that I didn't have fun with them. It was just, like, I didn't want to play them for extended periods of time because it felt like the same thing over and over again, in and out of levels, you know?
I know, I get the same way, where I actually tend to fall into the category of just playing my favorite levels and then moving on to the other game.
Yeah, it's fair. It's sort of a similar approach where it's like, yeah, I just want to pop in. I want to do a little bit. I don't want to spend, 4 hours or something playing this game. Like, I want to play a plethora of games at once, and then I'm done for the day.
Yeah. Well, the video I watched of this, it played it for like 3.5 hours, I think, to completion. So, I mean, think about all the other games you could have played within that time span. So, yeah.
Totally, I could have played like there. 53 games.
At least. Yeah. It was 53 different levels to 53 games. Yeah. We're jumping into the third installment of the TMNT video games for the NES with TMNT 3, The Manhattan Project. It's probably the best of the three. It has similar mechanics to the game previous. It didn't proceed like an arcade version of any sort. This was its own thing, whereas the second one, it was actually called the arcade game because it's based on the first TMNT arcade game. This is the first one that I actually remember being bought for me. The first Nintendo game, first game ever that I was bought, and I opened it up myself. Yeah, it was, I can't remember what year it came out. I didn't get it the year it came out. It was a little bit after, I believe. But it's a really fun one. It begins with the turtles spending their vacation in Key West. So they're all on a beach. They're all wearing sunglasses and surfing and genuinely just hanging out on the sand. It's fucking awesome. It's one of the most iconic things that I've remember the turtles being in.
I thought you were going to say they were just like laying on rocks.
Yeah, probably rocks. There's probably a lot of dogs there and like needles and rum ham.
Needles, rum ham, yeah, yep.
Yeah, so they're all sitting on the Jersey Shore and they're watching April O'Neil and her news broadcast or whatever, and it gets hijacked by Shredder. So Shredder takes April and turns the entire borough of Manhattan into this floating island. Now the turtles have to head to the Shredder's lair, save April and Manhattan, and it's all very cartoony. This is based on the cartoon and not like the comic series like the original NES game was. So expect the goofiness with this one. This is your classic side-scrolling, brainless beat-em-up gold. I mean, you were literally, there's no skill to this game. The only thing that is like hard about this game is lasting and long enough with enough lives to make it to the end. Super Shredder at the end really fucking sucks.
Well, you know, that's my favorite kind of game, brainless button mashing. Don't make me think too. About it. Don't make me strategize or anything like that. Just hand me a controller, tell me go, and I just start smashing the B button.
And it's eight levels, but these levels, they're pretty lengthy. And between these levels, you do see a lot of really cool characters from the cartoon, which is appreciated. I know the second one had quite a few, but this one, I think, beats it. So the lineup includes Dirtbag, Groundchuck, Slash, Leatherhead, Shredder, obviously, Krang, Bebop, and Rocksteady. And actually, Toka and Razar make an appearance, too, towards the end with Super Shredder. Kind of wild. Despite the cover of the game, where it shows a Triceraton, there's no Triceratons in this game at all. But a bitchin' cover, I'll say, done by Michael Dooney, I believe.
Yeah, wow, this is a bitchin' cover, huh? Mr. Triceratops man with a gun. Listen, I think that's something that we need to explore more as a society. I know that we're trying to force out another Jurassic World movie in the next like year. I implore anybody working on that film, look at this, the Manhattan Project cover, and take your inspiration here where it lies. Okay, I want dinos with guns. We need more of that in our media, okay? Not less guns, more guns, but give them to absolutely ridiculous things like dinosaurs, you know?
Dinosaurs.
Get guns out of the kids' hands, put them into the paws of grizzly bears or into the mouths of snakes, you know, things like this.
It's a pretty good idea.
No, it's a terrible idea. These are the things, Grimy, that I think about while you're talking and explaining things, and I'm thinking about animals with guns, okay? That's ADD that's for you, baby.
That's fair. Oh, that's funny. But yeah, this one, it's quite a few steps above the original one, which was pretty much impossible to beat without cheating. But that's not to say I beat this one either, because I never did without cheating. I definitely use that Konami code, level skip code, every single time, go straight to the end and do the deed. But it is fun. There's a level that I always see. You know how like the games, they'll like run their little computer display thing where they'll like play a level while it's like sitting at the title screen?
Yeah.
There's a level where you're on like this elevator on the outside of a building, probably the best level on this game, and it has awesome music, and I replay that one pretty often, and then I just turn it off and put the next game in. So if you decide to play this game, make it to that level or just skip to that level and play that one at least. I think you'll like it.
Okay, so I'm going to end my portion of the show, Grimy. I know I brought up the idea and we fell in love with it of animals with guns. And the only way that this game could have been any better is if they gave the shark a bazooka, I think. And I'm, of course, talking about Jaws, the video game.
They could have put frickin' laser beams attached to their heads.
Ah, oh, freaking laser beams. You see, Dr. Evil beat us to this 25 years ago. He came up with the idea, guns and animals, and he was really onto something.
It was a something. It's pretty good. I know that this game gets a bad rep, but I still like it a lot.
Yeah, it's absolutely. So here's the thing. This Jaws game, November of 1987 is when this one came out. It was made by a little company called LJN. If you're familiar with the Angry Video Game Nerd, or if you've been online and experiencing video game criticism since the mid-2000s, you'll know that a running gag for James Rolfe and the Angry Video Game Nerd was that LJN, the company, made a bunch of licensed games around this time for the Nintendo, and none of them were good. And that wasn't necessarily true. You know, they were responsible for things like the Friday the 13th game and the Nightmare on Elm Street game. They handled some, if I'm not mistaken, I believe like the Bugs Bunny games that were on Nintendo were LJN games. Just some big games with properties and IP associated. You know, X-Men. They managed to get all the licenses, and their whole thing was that they were sort of cranking out games pretty quickly. So were they the best games ever? No. And there certainly were some stinkers in the bunch. But I don't think anything that they put out that I've played was really all that bad. I think that the idea that LJN games being unplayable trash was really more of a meme that started with the Angry Video Game series and just spiraled out of control, where it almost became a dirty thing to be like, I like a game that LJN made. And this is the problem with this Jaws game, is that they have that little rainbow logo on the box art that they did make this game. And I think automatically people hear that Jaws is an LJN game and they dismiss it. Simply for the meme, you know. Sure. I think it's become popular to hate just based off of, ooh, they made it, it must be trash.
Yeah, I think that's true. A lot of those games I enjoyed. Who didn't like A Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th? Like, those ones, I play them pretty often, even now. Like, but this one, this is the best. Like, this one is a sure. Top tier LJN.
Sure. And I'm not saying that these games, a lot of them, don't leave something to be desired. They could be improved here or there, especially with 40 years of knowledge of video game development, you know, of what video games should be now compared to what they were at that point when these games were made. That was basically the Wild West for video games. They were figuring it out as they were going along. They didn't really know what great game design was at the time. A few people had it figured out, like Miyamoto with Mario. Like, okay, this is what makes a good game. Everybody else was just trying to, you know, do what they could and try this and try that. And this game, I think, gets more right than it does wrong. Basically, you know, it's Jaws. You go out on a boat, and this is what I really liked about this game as a kid, because there weren't a ton of games that I owned, I'll say, that allowed me to do this. But it had different styles of gameplay in this one single game. So you, in the beginning of the game, would get on your boat, and you'd go out, and you'd, you know, just sail around looking for Jaws, really. And half the time you would get stopped before that, kind of like in Pokemon, where it's like, oh, a Pokemon has appeared, and like you would have to go into battle. The same thing would happen where all of a sudden you'd hit something and you'd have to change over to the main style of gameplay, which was you're in your scuba suit, you're underwater, and you just have to like kill a whole bunch of sea creatures with your little harpoon.
Very RPG in the strangest way. Like, before RPG was really a thing, I feel like. It works for it, though. Like, you are traveling on your boat, you like hear a noise that stops you, and you start fucking battling sharks and jellyfish and all kinds of stuff with a harpoon gun, and you're just collecting some shells, and then you get to kick the shit out of Jaws.
Yeah, I mean, it's just cool being able to get an encounter with Jaws in 8-bit. And I'm sure at the time that this game came out, it's like, it was a new thing. It's like, well, what do you mean I can fight Jaws? Like, that's cool. I will say the gameplay is a little bit simplistic and it can get repetitive. You know, there's not much to it. You do the same thing over and over again. You're diving, you're shooting at sea creatures, you're back on your boat, rinse, repeat. Until you find Jaws. And the thing I will say is when you do come across Jaws, it's tough because he basically immediately destroys your boat. You know, you can fling cannonballs at Jaws to try to kill him, and that's the most effective way to try to take down Jaws. But you get like three or four cannonballs shot off before he actually destroys your boat. And then you're underwater with your harpoon just shooting at him. And you can shoot at him with your harpoon until your eyes bleed. And you really don't make a dent in his health. So I, needless to say, haven't made it very far in this game because I maybe I'm not very good at it. But it seems like it's kind of setting you up to not be able to defeat him. So I guess like the difficulty is skewed in that regard, but it's still fun, and I still had fun with it as a kid because I liked the way that it would change gameplay on me. That was something that on this system, like I said, with the games that I had for it, I didn't get very often. A lot of games would stick, like Mario, you'd stick to the same format. It's a platformer, run from left to right, and then you're done. Every level was that. Jaws was a little bit different, and it felt like you got a little bit more out of your experience just based off of what you were able to do in it. It would have been better if they gave him a machine gun. That's all I will say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, arm the sharks. Yeah, it's a fun one. So it's loosely based off of Jaws the Revenge, I believe.
Yeah, that's the only movie I haven't seen because I kind of have no interest.
I can understand that. Now, but I think Jaws 3 would have been a pretty prime contender, and just like being in this underwater bubble kind of aquarium thing and seeing Jaws come at you and running away from it. I feel like there would have been some opportunities there, but I mean, what we got is it's good enough, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if I could have gotten an 8-bit Jaws game that was set in SeaWorld, you know, game over, literally. That would have been pinnacle, but you know, we didn't get that, and that's okay too.
Mario! 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 Mario!
He's back. All you had to do was ask. Super Mario Brothers 3 from Nintendo. Now you're playing with power.
So I thought real long and hard about this one. No matter how on the nose it is for us to be talking about this, there's no way we can end a show about Nintendo without speaking about Super Mario Brothers 3. It would be sacrilegious.
Yeah, I mean, it's, listen, it's a classic for a reason, and it's basically, if you have to pick one game to describe what the NES was to people, it's gonna be Super Mario Brothers 3. Or maybe Duck Hunt, but no, I mean, realistically, it's Mario 3, right?
Yeah, definitely Mario 3. It set this gold standard for 2D side-scrollers basically forever. When you buy a Nintendo, this is the game you have to have. I mean, there's a reason why there are thousands of reputable retro video game stores that all have 20 copies of this at all times, because this is the game. It's frequently considered the best NES release of all time, and some actually call it the best video game of all time. Like, this is gold. I know I went on to say that these aren't our exact favorite games, but this one might actually be my favorite game of all time, and I'd play it literally all the time before we start the show. Like, I'm sitting here playing it before we start. I mean, it has a lot of things going on for it. Like, it introduced so many new elements to the Mario franchise, I guess, and it, like the board game style. I know we talked about this weird board game style with Godzilla before. This is, I don't want to say exactly like that. It's not anything like that, but it's has kind of the same idea where there's like this overworld, and I mean, you have this map that allows you to pick a level and stuff. This is stuff that like no other games really did before, and not to mention all the different items and stuff, your super leaf and just a slew of items. And not to mention when you're on this overworld, you have a little menu where you can pick an item. It's gold, man. I mean, it is where it is because of it being so good.
Well, I mean, this is really the game that sort of created the template that a lot of games follow now, especially platforming games. You know, before this, if we just think back to the first Super Mario, it was just, you know, level after level. There was no going back. There was no getting to pick, you know, which level you wanted to play. If you wanted to replay a level, you just couldn't do it. You'd have to play them in order, and that was that. This one introduced the map, like you're talking about, and then in that, it also included like variations that you hadn't seen before. So on the map, you'd have the little turtle guys pop up every now and then, so you could choose to go in the path and fight the little turtle guys, or you could choose to avoid them. I can't think of their name. The Hammer Bros, is that what I'm...
Hammer Bros, Hammer Bros. Yeah. Yeah.
Hammer Bros. Totally. You know, we had Toad's little mushroom house, so those would pop up, and you could go there and, you know, roll the dice or open a chest and maybe be given a power-up. It just introduced a lot of variability into how you played it. Like, it was still a linear experience, but... like there are little surprises and little things to discover. Oh, yeah. And it's still a very basic rudimentary experience. Cause again, it is an 8-bit game. So there wasn't a ton more that they could really do with this, but for the time, and even now looking back, it was sort of ahead of its time and what it was able to accomplish. And that's cool. And I think I've mentioned it before. I never had this for the NES. I only had this game for the Super Nintendo in the Super Mario All-Stars pack.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't really until I was older when I started playing around with emulation or, you know, things like that, where I got to try the original 8-bit version of this game. And I had played Super Mario 3 so much that I didn't think I was going to be impressed. If anything, I thought I was going to be let down because I had been playing the 16-bit version of this game for so long. And it, a weird thing happened because the first time I actually decided to play the 8-bit version, the original Nintendo version, I was just blown away how like similar it was to the 16-bit recreation. And I know that sounds stupid because obviously you'd want the 16-bit remastered version to be exactly the same as the original one, just with better, you know, visuals or whatever.
Yeah.
But it blew me away because it's like, wow, I guess I never really realized like this experience that I was having on a more powerful system is basically identical to what the original was on a system that was had half the power. And it's just so impressive. It's so crazy that they were able to do that with the limitations of the console. But what's more impressive is like the thing that they created has stood the test of time and it's still a good, playable, fun game. It doesn't feel dated. And like Mario games today are still ripping from that formula that they made, you know, well over 30 years ago.
What I think I like about this game is like it's so easy to play. Like it's easy to get lost in it. Yeah. And it's one of them ones where I don't feel like I'm bored with it. Like I can go back to it at any time. And on top of that, like this game, it does have some difficult areas, but it also is meant to be beat. Whereas like a lot of these other games, pretty much every game we have on this list, their whole idea was to not be beatable so that you would keep playing it and be cool with that game until they would finally get you a new one. This isn't like that at all. Like this is just enjoyable gameplay the whole way through. It does get kind of tricky here. You might play it a few months at a time to really perfect it, but it's not excruciatingly hard where you're like, I never want to play this game again. This game sucks.
At the end of the day, that's what a fair and balanced game is. It can be tricky, but you never feel like you're not in control. It never feels unfair. It feels like if you're not beating it, it means that you're not up to the challenge. It means that you just need to get a little bit better. But it's never an issue of the controls are bad or the controls are off or it's a little bit laggy or it glitched here and I died and it was unfair. It's just a very polished game experience. And if you're not winning, that's your own fault, and you need to get better. Like, it is, but it never feels like it's spitting in your face that you're bad. It's more like, come on, don't you want to try that again and get better and beat it? Like, you could do it if you wanted. And listen, like I said, as cool as I thought a game like Kabuki Quantum Fighter is, that game feels a little bit like, yeah, fuck you. You know what I mean?
It does. It's just some tough love, man. It can
be difficult. Yeah, it feels like it's bitch slapping you a little bit, where it's like, kinda. Yeah, you suck. You know, we're better than you. Like, Super Mario Bros. 3 feels like, yeah, you can do it. You just gotta try a little bit harder. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
It sounds like I'm saying the same thing, but it's just a little bit different, and you can feel it when you're playing the game.
So there's a couple of things I'd like to touch on before we end it. I know I've mentioned this on the show before, because this is not the first time I've talked about Super Mario Bros. 3 on the show. I never really noticed it as a kid playing this, but like, the whole game is just, it's a stage play.
Yeah, it is. And like, it's nothing I ever realized as a kid either. But it was a couple of years ago, one of the creators of the game came out in an interview, because he was asked that question. He was like, yes, it's a play. And I was like, oh, I guess I never thought about that. But yeah, at the end of each level, you run off stage. It's cool.
At the beginning title screen, there's like a stage curtain being drawn open, and all of the different pieces that are kind of just strategically placed throughout the game, they're all bolted to the background, and there's like a backdrop, and like shadows are being casted and stuff. And yeah, it's pretty awesome. Aside from all that, this game has 8 of the most iconic worlds that I can sit down and play and shred throughout on a daily basis and never get bored on. All that, and it was featured in one of the best movies ever of all time as the promo.
California.
Dude, it's so wild. Like, I never watched The Wizard the whole way through. And I'm never going to. There's a chance I'll probably never do that. I just don't feel the need to. But I mean, I've seen the important pieces of it, and it just kind of amazes me that because this game got postponed a little bit, they had the opportunity to make this movie, and you really only see Super Mario Bros. 3 at the very end for like, what, probably 5 minutes?
Maybe, if that. It's one of those that I've watched it. I have seen the full movie, but it took a few times to get through the full movie. Where it was like, all right, I watched the first half. Okay, I watched a little bit here. I've seen clips on YouTube. Okay, I'll watch the second half. It's not a great movie, but Super Mario Bros. 3 is in it, and that's certainly the best part of it.
Just such a weird concept. Like, could you imagine if there was a movie being made today and they were like, yeah, why don't you just throw, I know that you're behind on Grand Theft Auto 6. Why don't you just put that in there and we'll just showcase it there. It'd be the big promo. But we're only going to show it for like 2 minutes at the end of the movie.
I mean, I kind of wouldn't hate it, you know?
Like, I don't think I would either.
For the quest to find Grand Theft Auto 6, you know? Like,
hell yeah.
There's ways to do it. It might be entertaining. There is.
Absolutely. So if we could do that again, that'd be great. But I mean, I'm sure that you've all played Super Mario Bros. 3. I'm happy that you all sat and listened to us gush about it at least one more time. This will probably be the last time, so we had to make it count. So thank you. And moving on.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
Well, that was sure a lot of fun traveling down and revisiting the NES one more time. This has been a long time in the making, and if you dig what you just heard, make sure you check us out on all social media platforms.
Yeah, you can check us out over on Instagram at Leftover Pizza Podcast, and the newer social media platform, Threads. We're also at Leftover Pizza Podcast on there.
You can also check us out over on Twitter or X, whatever you cool cats are calling it these days, and that is at LFTOVR Pizza Club.
And Leftover Pizza is on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page, which is just called Leftover Pizza, and if you're already there liking the page, you can join the group, which is called the Leftover Pizza Club. It's a nice little community where we all hang out with some like-minded peeps, talk about nostalgia. We've got a good group chat going. Some great people up there to talk to. The other day, we took a poll on Oreos, and we're talking about what was the best version of Oreos, double stuffed, thin, regular. And Dan decided to throw it out there that cherry cola was the best Oreo, and I could not disagree more.
It's funny because you're the only one on there that seemed like they disagreed. Everybody else seemed to like them. Oh, shit.
Disgusting.
Seriously, though.
Disgusting cookies, an abomination. But hey, yeah. If you want to be part of these really intense conversations, again, over on Facebook, the Leftover Pizza Club.
Absolutely. And if that wasn't enough, check out our website, leftoverpizzaclub.com. Listen, guys, I'm writing again. I don't want to say too much, okay? And I don't want to promise too much. There's going to be stuff, and it's going to be there eventually. Just be patient. Summertime will be just around the corner, too, and that's where I feel like we all really start to thaw out and things start happening over there. And before you know it, we'll be into spooky season again, and that website's going to be a bumpin', so check out there periodically.
Leftoverpizzaclub.com. And yeah, maybe I'll start writing some Animals with Guns fanfic. So definitely check it out. And I just wanted to let you guys all know, remind you that we're also on Patreon. $3 a month gets you access to our Patreon exclusive monthly bonus show, which this month is an extension of the NES show. So if you didn't get enough of us talking about 8-bit games, we've got four more for you waiting just to be listened to. So $3, go listen.
And lastly, wherever you're listening to us, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. All that stuff helps a great deal, and we appreciate it very, very much. That's it. So, as they say, peace and love. Thanks for listening.
Very Ringo of you.
Very Ringo. Hit him with the old Ringo razzle-dazzle.